So it was all money.
So then I don't feel bad for him at all. Yeah. Zero. If that's what he's going to do, if he's just going to take the paycheck, then.
This podcast shoots from the hip now. Is that how we do it? I like it.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't think I want him to win the 35th anymore. I've just decided.
He's gonna find out about that.
Yeah, he's gonna sneak up behind you and he's gonna tap you with his Oakley sunglasses.
Welcome back to the Placeholders Podcast, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. It is Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. We're a day late because we had a very busy Monday, so we're recording on Tuesday, and sometimes that just happens. We've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about the UAE Tour, a new sprinter on the block in the women's peloton, Oman Hayan Paraiso. Am I saying that right, Dane Cash?
Pretty close. Yeah, you're pretty close.
Nah, probably
just
not.
Don't call it Jan.
Okay, I won't call it Jan. Yeah. We're gonna talk about the RCS taking over the Giro d'Onne, which is maybe good, maybe bad, unclear at the moment. And Rowan Dennis is retiring. We've got a whole bunch of good news for you today. Let's get right into it. Welcome to the show, Dane. We already heard you. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
And Abby Mickey, welcome back.
Oh my God. This is the first time that I've got to podcast with Dane, like actually with Dane, since having a baby. So...
We were on that show together, but not really.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Kaylee talked to you, and then us. Yeah,
and I feel like the people should know that Kaylee cut minutes of me talking. Minutes.
you got a little excited.
It was slightly
excited.
Yeah, it was one of those moments when I was like, I had thought about quitting cycling forever, but I got a little overly excited about the Tour Down Under, and I think that maybe I should continue to work in the cycling sphere.
I mean I loved all of your answers, but you had a lot to say. You hadn't said anything in a while and you had a lot to say, and I needed you to have slightly less to say, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
To make it fit our time constraints. Also joining us today for the first time, freelance journalist Johnny Long. How are you, Johnny?
Hello everybody. It's been a while.
It's good to have you back, Johnny. I'm very, very pleased. But let's get into the racing. I want to kick off with the UAE Tour, and in particular, a storyline that came out of the UAE Tour surrounding who was the world's best sprinter last year, Lorena Wiebes, and a new challenger. Abby, can you run me through what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So the UAE Tour, the inaugural women's UAE Tour, happened over the weekend, and three of the four stages came down to bunch sprints. Two of them were taken by Charlotte Kuhl of Team DSM, and one of them was taken by Lorena Wiebes. What makes this kind of interesting is that up until this particular race, Kuhl was actually Wiebes' lead out rider, and she got a couple opportunities to sprint last year at the one stage of the Giro. They switched it up and Wiebes led her out instead. But this was the first time that the two of them went head to head on kind of equal footing. And Charlotte Kuhl really came out on top. It was quite an interesting matchup, especially the final stage. I think for me, the final stage was the most impressive win for Kuhl, and also one of the most fascinating sprint situations I've seen in a long time.
Why is that?
Well, there's this really like weird moment where you had one of Wiebes' teammates on SD Works kind of on the front, and then you had Pfeiffer Georgie from DSM, who used to be Wiebes' last woman standing, in between her and Wiebes. So there was like a SD Works, DSM, SD Works kind of situation going on. And like the SD Works rider, I think it was Barbara Grishy, who's also new to SD Works this year, kind of like looked behind her and saw Five for Georgie. Five for Georgie was looking behind her looking for Charlotte Cool and saw Weebus. And so there was like this really weird situation. And meanwhile, Cool is completely out of the camera shot. Like you couldn't see her anywhere. She was multiple riders back from this trio at the front. And so you had both lead out riders moving off of the front, and Weebus had to start her sprint pretty early. But Cool was like incredible filtering her way through the peloton to get up front, and her turn of speed was just amazing to take the win on the final stage.
How long has Weebs been dominant, truly dominant for?
2 years?
Two, I was going to say, probably 2 seasons now. We've got this dominant rider, and she's basically won every single sprint that she didn't sort of screw something up entirely, right, in those 2 years. There's been very, very few exceptions to that. Are we seeing somebody who can finally challenge her in a real head-to-head, right? So I guess two questions then. Is Lorena Weebus still the best sprinter in the women's peloton? Yes or no? And if yes, then was it just screw-ups that led to Charlotte Cool taking victories, 2 victories at the UAE Tour?
I don't think I can answer with a yes or no. My answer is going to be really long. No, I think that a lot of it comes down to that SD Works, especially the team that SD Works brought to the UAE Tour, was very new. They've picked up a lot of new riders for this year, and they didn't really have... They had, like, Lonika Unikin has been on the team for a while, but they also had, like, Barbara Grishy is new to the team. Femke Marcus is new to the team. Weebus is new to the team. So they had a lot of new riders that haven't got to race together yet. So I think one of the reasons that Lorena was so dominant on DSM is because she was on DSM for a really long time. And with her there, they really dialed in their lead out. Now, Charlotte Cool, who got to learn from Weebus, is taking full advantage of that dialed lead out for herself. And Pfeiffer Georgie is a huge reason for the success, I believe, of Weebus in the last 2 years and hopefully for Cool now and going into the future. So I think, I don't know if it's that Lorena isn't as dominant or will not be as dominant, or if the team situation is a completely different team with different ambitions, and therefore she will have to learn how to win a sprint without 5 lead-out riders, which is what DSM would have done for her. On the flip side, Cool has now proved that she can beat Lorena, you know, 2 times out of 3 in a sprint, on a flat sprint. In UAE. Belgium will be different. But so DSM will have no problem putting their full force behind Cool now and kind of melding her into what Weebus was the last 2 years. So I think it's a super interesting situation going into the spring classics. How the sprints in UAE translate onto the roads of Belgium and the Netherlands, because I think it'll be really, really different. I think this was an awesome kind of taste of what we have to come, and is a very, very exciting thing to kind of, you know, Dane loves the whole who's going to be the best sprinter game.
Well, particularly in February, because it's just the thing that we can talk about for months. Because you can't really talk about who's the best climber right now.
Jebel Hafid.
I can definitely talk about who's the best climber right now, yeah. At least on the women's side.
Who's the best climber on the women's side?
Oh, man. Trek Segafredo did a really interesting job of picking up new riders for 2023. And 3 of their new riders in particular have proven that they are going to take this team that has been kind of in the top teams in the world. I think they are the top team in the world in a lot of ways, but when it comes to actual results on paper, they've had a couple strong performances, but they haven't actually been the best team out on the roads. That title remains with SD Works, interestingly. I mean, I think the point system is stupid, but that's a different conversation. Elisa Longaborghini won the overall at UAE, mainly... because of the new signing that Trek picked up, Guy Riolini, who just like basically rode everybody off of her wheel. I mean, just this incredible little climber, and she's on Trek Segafredo. She's there were some really cool quotes that came out over the weekend about that she said before signing for the team about how her hero in the sport is Aliza, and the fact that she kind of got to finish stage three hand in hand with her idol and help her take that win was really incredible. But she was amazing. I mean, it looked like she was like off for a coffee ride, riding up this climb as like rider after rider, just like popped off of their group. And there was only just her and Aliza left. And Aliza looked like she was like really struggling to hold on to Riolini's wheel, but she did. It was impressive. I mean,
I'm assuming that was a call that came from the director's car and who was going to take that win, right? I mean, you've got the two teammates coming up towards the line. They didn't sprint each other, obviously. I was a little bit confused as to why they made the decision they did. Why wouldn't you give the victory to the new rider, the young rider? You know, like this is just a blip on the Palmares of Elisa and would have been a huge thing for Riolini. So like, why would they do that?
I think they might be playing the long game when it comes to points. It might have been a decision having to do with Women's World Tour points and Aliza having more, being in a position where she could take the overall in later in the year.
Anything else that popped out at you from the UAE Tour, Abby?
Yeah, I think there's two other one other-ish takeaway or one other interesting thing that happened during the race, and that was the crosswinds on stage three. Stage three was like flat, pancake flat into the final climb. Eight or 9K at 7.7%, I think it was the final climb, but it was very much like a flat run into a climb. But the crosswinds caused some splits in the peloton that caught out a couple riders that you wouldn't have expected, I think, before the race. One of them was Marta Cavalli, who would have absolutely been a force to be reckoned with on that climb. She said after the race that one of the reasons that she was caught in that split is because she's still is not feeling super confident in the peloton after her crash in the Tour de France Femme last year, which is fair. I mean, she got basically plowed into from behind a rider going full speed. So it's going to take her a minute to bounce back from that. And that's what she said after the race, but she lost a ton of time. And I think prior to this, if you'd said, oh yeah, Cavalli will be caught out in the crosswinds, I would have been like, you're an idiot. That's not going to happen. But yeah. And FDJ Suez made a call to send their entire team back with Cavalli, including Grace Brown, who just won the Tour Down Under, to help bring Cavalli back into the peloton, and they failed to do that. So not only did Cavalli get caught out in the winds, they also took Grace Brown out of the competition, who she proved in Australia that she's climbing pretty well. So that was an interesting call by FDJ. I applaud their commitment to their team leader, but also you always need to have a plan B. So hopefully they learn from that for the future. Another rider who got called out in the crosswinds was Leanna Lippert, who's riding for Movistar this year instead of Team DSM. She's been on DSM for a really long time. But she climbed incredibly well after getting caught out in the winds earlier in the day. So
she was just like hanging out.
Yeah, it was
she
weird.
She was like hanging out and eating food.
Yeah.
What was she doing?
I don't know. It was weird. It was like, it happened really quickly too. And all of a sudden she was just like screwed.
I mean, there's probably a joke in here somewhere about going to Movistar and the Spanish and crosswinds and just not generally being particularly good at that sort of thing. But come on, like it wasn't an issue of power. It wasn't an issue of tactic. I guess it's kind of a tactic, but like she was just not paying attention, and not in the part of the peloton that she needed to be in at the time. It was a really weird. I was just sitting in front of my laptop going like, what are you doing back there?
I find it really funny when like a rider like Lippert gets caught out in the crosswinds because her old team DSM is on the front driving the pace. Like I always find that really funny when like your former team like really screws up your race. It's like, it was like, Yeah.
You'd think she would know to see all the rest of her old teammates going up to the front of the peloton, being like, perhaps something is about to happen. Perhaps I should stop eating my food at the back of this peloton. Anyway, just weird. Like a learning moment, perhaps, for her. You know, crosswinds have never really been her thing anyway, but still, you gotta keep yourself in position.
She was
for
on DSM
like
though. So she like she knows yeah. crosswinds. It's not like she doesn't know how to ride. Yeah.
Weird moment.
Yeah.
Weird
so
moment.
That was yeah. So that was those were like that was a couple like one final thought is I'm curious to see how UAE the UAE women's team develops over the season, because they have Sylvia Persico now. They've like scooped up a bunch of the Valcar riders, and Sylvia Persico was one of the revelations of 2022, and she's now on that team with Michaela Harvey, rode pretty well over the weekend. So yeah, I'm interested to see how that team kind of continues to build in the next months.
I mean, these races in the Middle East have not been boring for quite some time. They've really turned into kind of final tune-ups ahead of the classics. I mean, we are a week and a half away from Omloop, I will remind everybody. That's February 25th. That is coming up soon. We have literally only this podcast and one more podcast, and then it's Omloop time. And the meat of the season truly begins.
Ew.
Well, you don't like that? What, you don't like the metaphor there? No, the meat of the season.
That sounds
like a just like good steak.
The Beyond Burger of the season. How about
God,
that?
Those things are disgusting.
I don't mind them. I don't mind the Beyond Burgers. I've had quite a few. Anyway, we had a couple other races go down in the last week. We want to talk a bit about Oman, and I want to talk even more about the sort of Spanish Strada Bianchi, which we've talked about in the past. But let's start with Oman. Dane, what went down in Oman? What interesting American individual won a bicycle race?
Yeah, I was going to say the really significant thing is we get to keep talking about Americans winning races, which it's shocking how many times we've gotten to talk about that so far this year. Very unusual in recent years for American men to win so many races. This time it's Mateo Jorgensen, who has been kind of knocking on the door for a little while, racing for Movistar. So, by the way, if you were disappointed to hear Movistar taking some heat 5 minutes ago, well, be excited. Mateo Jorgensen for the Movistar men got a big win in Oman. That happened, let's see. So when you're listening to this podcast, you may already know, depending on how early it goes up, depending on when you're listening, you may know whether he has turned that stage win into a GC win. So he won the third stage of the race, which is a climb, and took the race lead. We're recording this as of Tuesday, so we've just seen the fourth stage when he has continued to lead the race, and by Wednesday, the final stage, it's a hard climb, and we'll know then whether he's able to kind of close it out and take the overall GC win, but he's got to get to the top of the Green Mountain climb, which is one of the big sort of iconic climb of this race, and should be a good test, to say the least, for Mateo Jorgensen. But yeah, really nice to see after, for American fans, you know, we've got Quinn Simmons won a few weeks ago. Obviously, we talked a bit about Nielsen Paulus, and now Mateo Jorgensen. I think there's something to be said for the fact that it seems to me that riders, American riders right now, young American riders, are probably having a little bit more success lately. I think maybe because there's slightly less focus on coming in somewhere in the top 10 on the Tour de France now than there used to be.
The TJ Van Garderen effect.
I felt like TJ Van Garderen, I mean, once he finished fifth, it was like from that point on, that was the goal every year. How high can you finish at the Tour de France? And everything else kind of falls by the wayside. And when that's not quite as much of a goal, look, I'm sure Mateo Jorgensen would love to finish fifth at the Tour de France. But when that's maybe slightly less of a goal, riders can focus on doing other things like Nielsen Paulus winning at San Sebastian a few years ago. And since then, we've seen a number of wins like this, where there have been one-day wins and one-week wins, riders doing things that get American names in the headlines a little bit more than they had been for quite some time.
I would agree with that. And congrats to Mateo. Love to see it as an American person. We haven't had a whole lot to cheer for in the last decade or so. And so good on you.
Also in Oman, Tim Merlier won the opening sprint. So if you're keeping track of sprinters doing well so far in the early goings, Mark Cavendish is at the Tour of Oman, by the way. But it was Merlier who won the day on the first day ahead of, well, not just right ahead of Pascal Ackermann. He finished sixth, but Ackermann would be the other kind of big name there. So yeah, points for Merlier in the sprint hierarchy competition that we'll keep track of, as we've already talked about.
Did you have something, Johnny?
Yeah, I was just going to talk about Mark Cavendish's first race in Astana colors, well, Astana colors slash Dutch national championship colors. I think this was his first race for Astana. We saw he had the Oakleys on still, so maybe that was why there was the whole delay. There was the whole horrible armed robbery from last year at his house, and that finally all got settled in the courts, and guys who did that went to prison. So that was like a gruesome thing which must have been hanging over him. But the sprint, he was like, the Astana lead out wasn't as bad as you necessarily would have imagined if you were just like thinking and hypothesizing it. Case Bowl wasn't there, but he will be there at the UAE Tour, which I guess is where we'll see quite how Mark Cavendish stacks up at this stage against the other fast guys. UAE Tour is looking stacked for sprinters. But I would say it was good to see him race, but not necessarily good to actually see him in like the monstrosity of what last year of his career is going to look like aesthetically. It's quite weird and mad.
Wait, I like his kit. Seriously, I think it's kind of cool looking.
I like his bike.
You're not a fan?
I don't know. Maybe it's just bias, but like speaking to like a few like British people, they're like, Cav, like if he went in like the 35 and if he gets that in an Astana kit, it's just a bit mad. And then you had the whole like 2012 Olympics thing. I don't know. It's just like, I still can't believe how he didn't get a deal with Ineos for this last year. Like,
sure.
What a weird world. But I mean, his lead out wasn't even that bad. There's like a young guy who's like trying to like battle for position and like kind of just didn't have the chops to keep up. But if they sort that out, then I think he's got a great chance at winning, not just the tour stage.
Just a small amount of context. You briefly mentioned the 2012 Olympic thing there. I assume what you're referring to is the fact that Alexander Vinokourov won that race, which was in London, and there has been some controversy surrounding that particular victory.
On this particular podcast, I'm a lot more conscious of, you know, doing anything that could get this fledgling outfit any unwanted attention, legally or otherwise. So I didn't want to necessarily as our Gen Z friends may say, I didn't want to go off sis on the...
I don't know what that means.
Do you know what that means? No, no one on this call has heard of Go Off Sis.
Never heard of it.
Have you seen how old we are? Old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at all the white in this
Mr. Born in the 90s, Johnny Long. Just rude.
Hold on, I was born in the 90s.
Abby's not that old. Abby's not old.
Yeah.
Abby, you're a 90s kid?
I'm a 90s baby, yeah.
Oh.
But I think it's like...
Both of you.
Ask Tilda. Tilda will know.
No, I think I know what it... Is like, go off, sis. Like,
yeah, like, yeah. Speak your truth.
Yeah, yeah, got it. Okay.
I think I butchered I'm out of practice at this. I butchered the explanation. But but yeah, I mean, I think what Mark Cavendish would have had to say about Monsieur Vinokourov directly after the road race in the preceding months is very different to how he was like, oh, it's so good to be associating with this man of honor and integrity for what could prove a very pivotal year of my late career.
That's why I'm just, yeah, that's the bummer, right? The bummer is that this does feel a bit of a team of last resort.
Not everything has to be nice. Everything can be confusing and messy.
I have it on good authority that he could have gone elsewhere, but the money.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So it was all money.
So then I don't feel bad for him at all. Yeah. Zero. If that's what he's going to do, if he's just going to take the paycheck, then
So this podcast shoots from the hip now. Is that how we do it? I like it.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Nice. Yeah.
I don't think I want him to win the 35th anymore. I've just decided.
He's gonna find out about that.
Yeah, he's gonna sneak up behind you and he's gonna tap you with his Oakley sunglasses and then he's gonna say words and you're not gonna understand them in his accent, which is probably for the best.
It wouldn't be the first time a rider had done that to me. So anyway, we'll move on from that. Actually, I do still want to win 35.
Too late, you said it. Too late.
No, they get pulled out, used out of context. Let's get to what I think is the coolest race that that I've seen over the last week, or that occurred over the last week. This is, I mean, the way to think about it is Spanish Strada Bianca, right? It is dirt roads, sort of a gravel race, mix of pavement and dirt. Was won by Tadej Pogacar over the weekend. Dane, you say it properly with a semi-Spanish accent. Jaén Paraíso?
It's pretty good. Jaén Paraíso.
Paraíso.
In Andalusia, southern Spain, sort of a very warm place this time of year compared to the rest of the world. So it's a pretty nice place to do a bike race, I would think, in February, at least compared to, I mean, doing one in northern Colorado, for instance, where it's going to be snowing this evening.
Fantastic race. Like, just a really, really interesting race in the same way that Strada Bianca is a really interesting race. You know, you've got this sort of the off-road element, right, to add a bit of unpredictability. In fact, Pogacar ended up with a flat tire. He had already had an enormous gap, and so he was fine anyway. But one of those races where I kind of feel like if it was given a good, better slot in the calendar, like a nice weekend slot in the calendar in a couple of weeks' time, it could do the same thing that Strada Bianca did, which was go from a sort of relatively unknown Italian one day to a fan favorite and one of the biggest races in the world within 5-6 years. It feels to me like it could do that. And maybe if you stuck it within a week of Strada, then you could get this kind of like little mini, almost like gravel block of cool races, and I would love that because it was just really those courses make for really cool racing.
It seems pretty clear that the riders feel similarly, and when you, I mean, last year you had Alexei Lutsenko take the win, and then this year it's Tadej Pogacar. So clearly, riders want to race this event. I mean, they are already pulling in really big names, and it's a very young race. But if Tadej Pogacar is going there to win. Going there to win so much that he's attacking from... He attacked from, I think, 42K out, more than 40K from the finish. So clearly he wanted this. And that is a really good sign, I think, for the race, that a rider of his caliber is going to go there and try to do this in February. Obviously, the riders like it too. So yeah, I think there's the race has a bright future, and I think it's a good idea to maybe kind of try to pair it with some other races and up the hype a little bit.
I think also, crucially, the fact that Pogacar is racing this particular race, which... You know, the chances of crashing in a race like this are definitely higher than they are in almost any other race throughout the year because you're not on pavement all the time. The fact that he is taking that risk maybe starts to answer the question that we had at the end of last year, and in particular after last year's Tour de France, where we were asking, okay, well, he just lost the Tour to somebody who rode the Tour in a much more kind of traditional way, right? A more Team Sky way, a more careful way. Is Pogacar in an effort to come back and win the Tour de France, is he going to have to match that? Is he going to have to be more careful and conservative? I think this starts to answer that question a little bit in that a truly conservative bike racer would not line up at this small Spanish one day on dirt, right? So I guess that makes me happy, makes me think that maybe we're going to see the same Pogacar this year. We may see him lose the Tour de France again as a result, but we're going to see the same kind of gunslinging bike racer that we have enjoyed in the past.
Yeah, I think that's kind of par for the course for him. I mean, he's a monument winner. He's a guy who goes out and races one days with a lot of interest, seemingly every year. And I think this is just what we expect and what we get from Pogacar, which is really great compared to past champions who maybe have been less interested in one day racing. There's one in particular that I often speak very highly of, actually, but his one-day prowess, Chris Froome, not quite up to par. If you look at his results in one days, it's like shocking how how little he was able to achieve in one days in his career.
If you're going for like a clickbait and podcast title, so you could have Dane Cash calls out Chris Froome on his one-day race record.
That's right. Yeah,
and he could do like a shock face.
At this point, it seems kind of unfair to even. Yeah, but. Not really good at it, or at least not very good at getting the results.
No one knows more about clickbaity headlines than Love Island Johnny Long.
Wait. We're gonna need some explanation here, Abby.
All right. So, in case you have been living under a rock, there's this new podcast out in the world that's called The Album Files. It's quite good. Highly recommend that you listen to it. But on the most recent episode, I talk about, you know, we talk about what we've been listening to lately, and I've been listening to a lot of the 1975. And a former colleague of ours, Tilda, is also a huge fan of the 1975. And so we have competing viewpoints on what their best album is. And so she sent me a link to an article that was all five of the 1975's albums definitively ranked and said points were made. So I read the article, and at the bottom of the article, there was like links to articles like about the 1975, one of which was titled, "It's Time to Admit the 1975 Are the Lamest Band in the World Right Now."
Click.
And I clicked on it because that's just clickbaity. The line underneath it, "It's music for people who cry after having sex." Okay, fair. And so I was looking at this article and I was like, well, this is mean. And I was reading it and I was like, who would write something like this? This is awful. And I scrolled to the top and it was like, it says Johnny Long. And I was like, that's hilarious. So I screenshot it and sent it to Tilda. And I was like, haha, Johnny Long. And she was like, yeah, Johnny Long. And I was like, Johnny Long. And she was like, Johnny Long. And so I then sent it to Johnny Long, who was like, how did you find this?
Doing a deep dive on my past, my troubled past.
And so then I clicked on his byline, and he has such gems in there, like, who is Taylor Ward, rumored to be Love Island's newest girl, who also has famous parents. This is a good one. Meet Zara.
I need context here. What site is this on?
Okay, go on.
Explain yourself, Johnny.
Provide brief context. Okay, so I used to... My path into the media was through a website called The Tab, which is a network of student publications, and they have a national office that writes about, you know, pop culture, that sort of thing. So I wrote for them as a student and then got a job in the head office. And the way it works and the business model, which was kind of genius, is that all the students write for free. So all your content is written for you for free. And then the older students then get paid a bit of pocket money to then edit the free labor. But the one problem with the business model is that in the summer, all the students are on holiday and not at uni documenting what's going on. And, you know, you needed, back in those days, the heydays of the mid to late tens, you know, page views made money. So in the summer, we'd be scrabbling around for whatever little morsels we could. So you'd be writing SEO content. The Zara Love Island one was actually
It's not too late. You can still apply to be on Love Island this year.
Yeah.
You'd be writing that.
Sounds like you had a beat. Sounds like your beat was very
specific. That was my summer beat. Well, the annoying thing as well is that the website's sort of broken, so you can only scroll back like a bit. So that was when I was like dialing it in and looking for a way out. But if you'd been able to scroll, you'd have seen other pieces I did, such as when I ate like an Olympic swimmer for the day during the Rio 2016 Olympics and documented what that was like.
Or calling time on adult Harry Potter fans who need to,
yeah,
who
that was a good one.
Grow up and read another book.
True. Yeah, it was
well,
all that sort of stuff. We'd go in the morning and they'd be like, Johnny, what do you not like today?
There's a special place in hell for people who still call their parents mummy and daddy.
True. the one they never let me write was like, you can't have liking dogs as your main personality trait.
They wouldn't let you write that?
And that's why I transitioned into the world of cycling media. So then I went to write clickbait for Cycling Weekly instead, a seamless transition. And then I stuck my thumb out and you guys picked me off the street and clothed and fed me. And now we're here.
we spotted something in you, Johnny. We knew you had more beneath the surface. I appreciate this context.
Yeah, and in response, I've spent my unemployed days writing stupid little blogs about my football team, which no one cares about, as sort of a cathartic way to expunge my Love Island Johnny days.
We all had to get started somewhere. We all had to get started somewhere.
What I did enjoy, Kayla, you mentioned the bike change, and it was like bike race and ASMR, how Pogacar just sort of like gently leaned his bike up against that post and calmly waited and then just got back on. I don't know, I find it hard to take much joy out of these early season races, but for some reason that just like hit the correct dopamine receptor, and I was just like, just look at this nice young man leading his bike up like a postman about to, you know, get your letters out. It was great.
Well, and he could have stopped anywhere, right? There weren't posts frequently on that particular road. Like, yeah. he probably rode the flat a little extra time so he could like ride up and put it against the post, which is just...
And that's like going through his head while he's trying to win. It's just great.
We've got a couple other news hits here. Rowan Dennis is retiring. He announced it. He's going to retire at the end of this year. I think I'm at that point in my cycling journalist career right now where everyone's retiring that started around the same time I did. I talked about Peter Sagan before, but Rowan Dennis is another one. It's, you know, these sort of like 1990s baby, early 90s baby riders are they're all kind of calling it quits around now. They've been at it since, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. They've been racing for more than a decade. And I think this is kind of probably the start of the wave a little bit, the Peter Sagan and Rowan Dennis announcements. And I would imagine that a lot of other riders of that era, oh, and Thibaut Pinot was the other one, right? Pinot's also another 1990. We called it, at Velonews back in the day, we called it the class of 1990, which didn't make any sense because that's actually the year they were born, not the year they graduated. But anyway, doesn't matter. All these riders that were born around that year, they're reaching the end of their career, and they're the riders that defined this sport for the last decade in a lot of ways. So Rowan Dennis is one of them. I think we'll be sad to see him go. He's certainly been a bit up and down. He's an emotional guy, clearly, but he's put in some amazing, amazing rides and has won some incredible things, and the sport will be worse off for losing him, I think, next year.
I would point out that all the 90s riders, all the riders born in 1990 are not that old. I mean, even for professional sport, they're going to be retiring in their still early 30s. I mean, obviously Alejandro Valverde is an exception. Most riders don't ride that long, but like Greg Van Avermaet's still out there doing his thing, and you know, riding into your mid-30s is pretty common in the sport of cycling. So for the Pinos and the Dennises and the Sagans to call it quits now, it is a little bit early. I think they're retiring maybe a little bit earlier than we might have expected, with the exception of, I guess, Sagan. I feel like Sagan leaving road racing behind, that feels like it's the writing's been on the wall for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, it's bell curve, right? I think we're going to see a flood of retirements in 3 years, but we're starting to see them, I think, is my point. And I don't know, I guess the broader point there is if you have favorite riders of that era, and I'm sure you do, because like I said, they've been defining the sport for a decade now, enjoy it while it lasts, because they're close to done, right? That whole generation is close to done. I think like Kwiatkowski is in the same zone, and I'm trying to remember who else was in that group. But yeah, there's some phenomenal bike racers that are, we've officially reached twilight, and that's it's kind of sad, but at the same time we've got all this amazing talent coming up, all these 21-year-old Tour de France winners. So we just get older.
I was only going to ask Dane to clarify what he meant by Greg Van Avermaet doing his thing. Because I can't, like, when he popped up, and I think it was like a Cycling News article the other day, and like saying how he's going to like target the classics differently this year. And I was like, dude, like, come on. No power of the gold helmet. You're going up against like all the young guys who are just going to smoke him.
I mean, that's kind of exactly what I mean, though. Like, that's his to thing. Me, that is common. That's not necessarily Greg Van Avermaet's thing. Like, he doesn't have a patent on that. It's just, that's what I kind of expect from a 36-year-old, 37-year-old pro. Like, they don't necessarily retire when they're 32, 33. They usually kind of keep going until maybe maybe it's time to call it 5 years ago. But they don't. That's a pretty common thing, I think, in this sport.
Yeah.
And then, there are riders who go into their later years and still win. I mean, Alejandro Valverde was winning well into his late 30s, still doing big things well into his late 30s. So that, I think, does happen quite a bit in cycling. It's not American football where, you know, a lot of running backs, they turn 30 and it's like, well, all right, expiration date. That's unusual for cycling.
And I guess he's done his hard work, so he might as well, you know, cash in as teams still want to hire you. Another phrase that we could, after the success of Golf Sys, you could say he's secure in that bag. And he's well within his rights to, so.
Like one time I've heard that, so that's good. I feel a little less old now.
We've got one more little news item here. RCS, that is the organizer of the Giro d'Italia, is taking over the organization of the Giro Donne, which it actually is not going to start until 2024. So it's still going to be run by an organization called Starlight this year. But as of next year, the Giro and the Giro will both be under the same organization, which I think a lot of people probably thought that they were before, but they haven't been. And I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing. RCS is obviously a very large race organizer. They can and could put significant resource behind the women's Giro. Some other changes might happen, like maybe it won't overlap with the Tour de France anymore, which purely from a selfish perspective would make life a lot easier. What do we think? Is this a good thing, a bad thing? What's up?
Abby, I think we're all looking at you, but I didn't want to say anything before you said something, because I feel like whatever I say is you're going to have more authority on it. I will point out that, I mean, can it get much worse?
Yeah, well, the reason I didn't jump in automatically is because I was curious if either of you had a, Dane or Johnny had a thought. So I was leaving the floor
My
open.
Thought is it can't get much worse than what it's been, right? So maybe RCS can bring it to a new level, right? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, the current organizers haven't been organizing the race for very long. I mean, in 2020, the race was, after 2020, the race was demoted from the World Tour, and then they were picked up by this new PMG sport thing that were like, oh, we're going to have way more prize money. We're going to have 2 hours of live coverage. We're going to have all of this stuff. And then in 2021, they did not deliver on the prize money. The live coverage was about 30 minutes and did not work on the Queen stage. So 2021, they were in the World Tour. And the whole race was pretty disappointing. The race itself was just abysmal because of the course that they made. 2022 went a lot better. So I feel like they actually kind of figured out what they were doing. The prize money went up by 5 times. It's not quadrupled, it's quintupled.
Yep.
Sure. I don't math. So it quintupled. I don't know if they actually...
I'm not sure that's math.
I don't know if they actually paid that money out to the riders, but they said that they would increase the prize money that much, and they actually did have like an hour and a half and a bit of live coverage for every stage, so they were making improvements. When it comes to RCS, I don't know. I can't decide if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I feel like when race promoters who have huge men's races then take on a women's race, they just don't give it the same amount of attention that they would give the men's race, and their priority is the men's race, and that is very obvious, with the exception of the Tour de France Femme, and I believe a big part of that is because of Zwift. So I don't know. I think this is something that I'm curious to see how it goes in 2024. And I mean, it's February. It's February 14th today, and we still don't even know the route of the women's Giro, which is one of the grand tours in theory, quote grand tours of the year, and we still don't know even where the women will be racing in July. So yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of, when it comes to the Giro, I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, we'll see how it goes.
It's not really optimism or pessimism. It's just resignation.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that.
It's always going to be a huge staple in the calendar, but it's just like I've never been impressed. And they have so much potential to like put together an incredible route and like to have some incredible racing. And they just, every single year, no matter who the organizer is, they fail to do so. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes. RCS has only one, I believe, other women's race, and that's Strada Bianchi. And we didn't have more than like 30 minutes of live coverage of Strada Bianchi until 2022. So in that sense, the only thing that I'm asking for is, like, for the love of the future of women's cycling, RCS, please just give us the live coverage that we need, because that is the only way the sport will grow. And we had it last year in 2022. We hopefully will have it this year. We just need it. So please just, no one cares about five times the amount of prize money. Just give us the live
coverage. The TV coverage.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
Hold on. We have them. I don't know how we feel about cameos, but somebody has a thought.
Yeah. We can do cameos.
I hope it's Lila.
Lila has a thought on RCS. although I haven't raced the Giro myself, but I have to say that with a big organization, you would get a lot more people working on it. And as you could imagine, I mean, there's a lot of towns in Italy bidding for starts and whatever. So if RCS took it seriously and really wanted to make a big, really grow the women's Giro, then they definitely could, because they could also have towns first put on the women's race and thus then get a men's race granted to them as well. So they definitely have the opportunity for it. It's just really a matter of how much resources are they going to put in and what kind of deal they want to make.
I agree with this mystery man.
That guest had a really nice voice for podcasting.
He's got a great face for podcasting.
I think it basically comes down to kind of what you were talking about, Abby, which is like they will be distracted, right? Because they have another race that makes them more money and is older, but they will have the resource. So it's this weird balance thing, right? And it's kind of the same issue with ASO, which is ASO was very distracted and put most of their time and energy forever into the men's Tour de France, right? We got La Course, and it was this 3 days and then 1 day, and it always felt like a bit of an afterthought. But as soon as they sort of fully decided to do it and had the backing of Zwift, like you were talking about, then they could make it into a big successful show. And I think that the potential is there with RCS. It's all going to be about the execution versus having the race owned by some small little race organizer where the potential isn't even there. Even if they execute well, the potential is not there because they don't have the money. So I think in general, I think it's probably better to have it run by one of these big organizations, because at least you have the opportunity to be successful. But it's all, like I said, down to the execution and down to whether they actually care or not.
RCS also more or less runs, I don't know if they are officially the person who operates or the group that operates it, but they basically run the UAE Tour and the UAE Tour Women now as well. So that's another example. And I think if you liked the UAE Tour Women this year with the inaugural year, that's a good sign at least that they're capable of this.
When it comes to the calendar, like just one note, just because you mentioned it, Kaylee, on the calendar, they will have a hard time moving it because the women's calendar is like stacked. I mean, there's nowhere to put it except where it is. So I think that is something that I can hopefully dive into in the future. The women's calendar, maybe not on this episode, obviously, but it's really interesting looking at it from the perspective of someone who's followed the sport for a long time at this point. That the calendar is so crammed full, more so than ever before. So, like, especially the Madrid Challenge, they've moved earlier in the season. So the only place that they would be able to put the Giro would be end of the season, and nobody wants those end-of-the-year slots. So yeah, that is an interesting point that you made, and I could talk about it for a long time.
Yeah, we don't need to get too far into it. I think it basically would just come down to the UCI saying, actually, this is a grand tour, and we're going to stick it wherever we damn well please, and we're going to move everything else, which is probably how it should go and how a real sport would deal with it if they needed to do that. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that, and we will keep you updated on how that's looking. Again, that's not till 2024. 2023 will remain whatever the existing plan was. But next year, RCS will take control. Well, thank you for joining us this week, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. Although by the time you get this, it'll probably be a day late. It's about right for me, actually. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Placeholder Podcast. Thanks for joining, Dane.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Abby.
Instagram story size and dimensions. What is the best size and dimension of an Instagram story? Johnny Long.
Joining, Johnny.
I don't think I'd Instagram at that point. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for having me on.
You're a fraud.
I'm glad we could save you from whatever that is. All right. Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
It's a vegan chicken nugget.
A vegan chicken nugget. Wait, so is that why you weren't really a big fan of calling it the meat of the season?
No, I'm not vegan.
You're just eating vegan chicken nuggets?
Yeah, they're better than the chicken ones.
That seems highly suspect, but all right.
It's wrong.
A lot of people say it, though. Absolute nonsense.
A lot of things.
Break it. Can you break it in half? I want to see what the situation is inside.
It's like green inside.
I was just saying that we're going to call this segment Ian's Brain. Ian's Brain.
Yeah, right. And even if he's not here, this is
which
what
we makes
talk
a
about,
lot more sense if you
or...
read it. It doesn't make a lot. I don't know how to say it to make it make sense. So I'll just put it in the show notes. Ian's Brain will be the name of this segment.
With no Ian.
With no Ian today, unfortunately. But, you know, he'll be back. And I think the segment can remain regardless. And frankly, like, this is a perfect unplanned, so thank you, Abby. Perfect Yane's Brienne.
Well, you were distracted segment. For a second, and I know Dane loves chicken nuggets, and I thought that I would...
He does.
I thought that I would maybe strike up a second long conversation while you were distracted about chicken nuggets, but mine are vegan.
But we're all recording, so it's going to go into podcast.
Can I ask a quick question before we move on? What is a chicken finger?
They're longer, they're bigger, so a nugget is like, it's like a nugget. I mean, the shape is in the name.
Is it like, like a mozzarella stick?
I think Johnny's question is coming from the fact that chickens don't have fingers.
Yeah, and buffaloes don't have wings, but we still have those too, right? So, and they're not even made of buffalo.
No, chicken.
The look on your face, Johnny, right now, it was as if you just realized. The look on your face.
No, you know, I was trying to figure out
out
if chickens have fingers, because I'm thinking back to like all the animated movies where,
I mean,
they're very dexterous chicken characters.
Right. Yeah. But that's not what it is. It's just it's not that. They're not actually a chicken's
finger.
No,
this is rich coming from Johnny. Fish don't have fingers either. What are fish fingers made out of? Fish.
Wait, why am I holding the can for fish fingers?
I think it's because you're English.
Yeah.
Are they English?
Yeah. Oh, right.
We don't have them.
Oh, they're pretty good.
We have fish sticks.
We have fish sticks.
Yeah. Also, that sounds gross. Chicken fingers and fish sticks. Oh.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this week's Ian's Brienne. We're gonna move it right on.
I want to know what Johnny eats. He's been so judgmental of everything we've talked about. How does he stay alive?
Next week.
Before Abby moves us on, I'm going to move us on, because then people like to point out that Abby is the professional one. I'm reining in this podcast right at this moment, because I can see in Abby's face that she wants to.